This is the Partnership Podcast, where we bring you all things business from the Vail Valley, including business news, current issues, advocacy alerts, community conversations, and more. Presented by Vail Valley Partnership.
Welcome to the Partnership Podcast. This is Chris Romer, President and CEO of Vail Valley Partnership, and I'm really pleased today to be joined by Danya Rumori from the NAR Initiative. Danya, tell us a little bit about the initiative and what it is and what you're trying to do.
Thanks, Chris. So the NAR Initiative, G-N-A-R, stands for Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative. And really the whole goal of the NAR Initiative is to serve Western Gateway and Natural Amenity Regions and the communities in them, places like Vail and most of Eagle County, but also places like my hometown, Sandpoint, Idaho, or communities many of us have maybe not heard of until recently, like Torrey, Utah. So communities that are surrounded by national parks, other public lands, other very desirable natural amenities, which as a result of those natural amenities often become very popular places to live or visit, as I think Vail knows quite well.
Yeah, it's been that way for a long time, really, since they started turning chairlifts, right? In the early 60s, it changed the community a little bit. And many of the other types of communities you talked about around the West, the gateway to the national parks and some of the impacts there. How long has the initiative been around?
The initiative has been a vision we've had for many years. It was born originally out of work that I was doing up in North Idaho around my hometown and simultaneously around Zion National Park. And through realizing that a lot of these areas had very similar problems, even if they were very different communities. So like Springdale, Utah, right outside of Zion National Park, is only about 500 residents, but they host tens of thousands of people sometimes in a day. Whereas Sandpoint, Idaho, where I'm from, is much more of a what would we consider a natural amenity community. It's got a lot of different natural amenities, a big lake. It doesn't necessarily have that major influx of people, but it does have the ski season and then the summer visitation season and then the fringe season in between, where it's really hard to keep people employed. And also has always had that risk of either booming, being the next community featured in Sunset Magazine where everyone wants to move, or busting, right? And not being able to keep people who grew up there employed or having enough jobs for those people. And so even though those two communities I was working in as a collaboration professional seemed so different in some ways, we were seeing that they had very similar growth and development challenges, and then also some differences. And through that experience, we started to kind of ask the question, is this true across these gateway and natural amenity region communities in the West? And we did some research, started looking at the planning and development challenges in these places, and again, found that even though they're in some ways so strikingly different, they are also so strikingly similar. And that's why we coined the term NAR, Gateway Natural Amenity Region, to kind of be a bucket to capture both the Springdales and Moabs and Jacksons with the Whitefish, Montana, and Sandpoint, Idaho's. And really the vision of the NAR initiative is through research, education, and capacity building to help these communities protect the things that make them so special.
Yeah, and you kind of answered my next question, which is kind of what is the goal and what are you trying to do with the initiative? And it's really to provide resources for planners and governments and communities on how they grow in a really kind of sustainable way.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And just how do they, like I said, keep the things that make them so special? And for some communities, we hear they're worried about dried up and becoming an abandoned small town because their economy is shifting from, say, a historical extraction to needing something new. And so often they do look to tourism. However, some of these communities are wary of that for good reason, right? They say they don't want to become Moab. And even though everyone loves to go visit Moab, we hear often from communities they don't want to become Moab. So we're interested in helping those communities, again, the ones that maybe are looking for new economies and worried about drying up, as well as helping places like Jackson, has been dealing with amenity migration and housing affordability and other issues for really decades. And obviously it's probably become particularly extreme in the last decade, but they've been on this journey for a while. And so trying to serve that gamut of communities, and especially right now, recognizing that a lot of these places maybe thought they'd never become discovered and they might be next in line for amenity migration, remote workers who, because of COVID, now have a lot more flexibility in where they can work. So I think a lot of our focus is going to be on those planning and development challenges that places experience as they grow and develop. And like I said, we want to serve places that are maybe worried about drying up as well.
Yeah. So let's explore that a little bit, because I think that's a really interesting concept and idea when you talked about amenity migration and remote workers. Share a little bit about what does that mean? I mean, I have an idea, but share with our listeners, what is amenity migration and what impact does that have on community?
Amenity migration is sort of an age-old phenomenon, right? People moving towards amenities. In this context, we're particularly talking about natural amenities. So anything from your ski areas and your beautiful lakes to just having lots of public land and outdoor spaces nearby. So again, people have done this for ages, but what we're really talking about now is this mass migration of people away from particularly urban areas, but places with lower amenity value in some ways, with less recreation opportunities, towards places that have a lot more amenity value. So a lot more open spaces, but also things like dark skies, right? Natural amenities come in many forms, cleaner air even. And as we both know, since we live in the West, and I'm from the rural West offers a lot of natural amenities, especially now, right? When we've seen a lot of pressure on recreation infrastructure, but desire for more recreation infrastructure. Those natural amenities are everything from trails to, like I said, just the clean air, just having big open spaces that you can get out even amid COVID and feel safe and away from people. So what we're really talking about is the movement of people, not necessarily from urban areas, but a lot of it is coming from urban areas. And we're particularly interested in that movement to the rural West, which seems to be kind of the hotspot for a lot of that amenity migration. Some of that is driven by remote workers, right? It's the fact that you can work for Google and you used to live in Silicon Valley, but now you no longer need to be there. So you're like, cool, I've always wanted to go live in rural Utah, so I'm going to relocate. So some of it is that. Some of it is also just, again, I think COVID has made living in an apartment in a small town, or sorry, a big city, to be not nearly as desirable as living with more space in a smaller town. So some of it's also people moving their work with them because it's just, they feel it's like a good idea to have more natural amenities nearby. So it's not just the remote worker phenomena.
Yeah. And the Zoomtown the Zoomtown trend that we've seen during the COVID time, for sure. I had never heard of Zoom, I don't think, before COVID. And I certainly hadn't heard of Zoomtown. And now my days are filled on Zoom, and the Zoomtown phenomenon has been written up in dozens of publications, from Inc. magazine to The Economist, Fast Company, et cetera. And there seems to be a really unique alignment between the NAR initiative and the Zoomtown trend. But you've been at this, you've recognized this well before this current trend. It's yours. And the work of the initiative in helping these communities is just a timing issue rather than anything, because you've been at it for a while. So how would you explain this, what seems to be a hyper fast-tracked movement towards this Zoomtown trend? What spillover effect does that have on housing prices and other community implications?
I'm going to hit on a few things that you said. And first is just to circle back to an earlier question. I mentioned that the NAR initiative has been a vision since even like 2016. However, we were kind of, as academics do, building ideas, trying to get resources, slowly building the idea. In some ways, I think waiting for the right opportunity. And while I don't necessarily think that COVID has been an overall positive, one of the opportunities for us is it really kind of put a fire under our efforts. And we really saw that this was increasingly urgent. As you probably know, a lot of Colorado ski towns, places like Blaine County, Idaho, where Sun Valley is at, Park City here in Utah, some of our NAR communities, particularly ski area communities, were first some of the most hard hit COVID caseload communities in the States when COVID hit in March. So we were seeing some of the highest caseloads per capita in some of these small rural towns because people were bringing COVID with their skis to these places. So that was the first whammy of what I've taken to calling a triple whammy on our NAR communities, was just initially a very high caseload tied to the transience of their populations. Second came the economic impacts, right? That the ski areas closed down, places like Moab totally shut down their economies because they knew they couldn't handle an outbreak of COVID. And the economic impacts have continued to be there, even though a lot of these communities have opened up, right? So that's the second whammy of COVID. And then the third is, and we kind of saw this one coming, we saw all three of these coming. The third one is, oh, I don't want to be in a city anymore. And I don't necessarily have to be. So I'm going to move to the rural West, probably to a NAR community, because they're really awesome places to be. So this amenity migration related to the Zoomtown phenomena and just more broadly that we're seeing was that third impact that we back in March could kind of see coming. And so that really was the impetus between taking the NAR initiative from an idea we were building to actually launching something, you know, creating the website, actually starting to host events and really fulfilling the vision. So it really was only in the middle of this year that we launched the NAR initiative and have really just taken it public only in the last few months. And I think a testament to how much NAR communities want to engage with each other, want resources and tools. As soon as we did a public launch of our events, we started having 300 people sign up consistently for webinars, right? So it didn't take very long to get the word out about what we were doing because I think people are really eager for it and the impacts are really showing up. So I just want to come back to like that, you know, the launch really happened this year because of the urgency that COVID's presented. And COVID's impacted these communities in a lot of different ways. And I think it's really important to keep in mind that we're now seeing this amenity migration, the Zoomtown phenomena, where people now want to work remotely and just Zoom into work and they can do that from Vail or anywhere else. That's happening in these communities in the context of many of them having significantly decreased tax revenue from the kind of shutdowns and related spending on tourism and services tied to COVID. And so it's a bit of a perfect storm in some ways for these communities in the negative sense, right? Of that's a lot to deal with. And with this movement of people, we're hearing some pretty drastic numbers of people moving into Montana, especially into a lot of these NAR communities. And we're hearing from these communities that they're just overwhelmed dealing with building permits. Right, so trying to do long-term planning and plan for what do we want to be when we grow up is really hard when you're growing so fast you can't even keep up with it. And then you put that in the context of the fact that lots of these communities don't actually have professional planning staff, or if they do, it's very limited. And again, probably not many people who are really focused on this more long-range planning, broader planning, housing affordability. It's very challenging for these communities under normal circumstances to deal with the kind of growth we're seeing right now, but I think they're that much more compromised often because of COVID and the impacts it's had, not to mention still dealing with an ongoing public health crisis. And then just to your question about like sort of the almost like the spillover effects or the interconnected effects, amenity migration doesn't inherently necessarily create a housing affordability challenge. However, we saw back in 2018 when we did research in NAR communities throughout the West, that just because of the desirability of these places to live, whether they're small or big communities, housing affordability was a moderate to acute problem across these communities in the West, with about 83% of our survey respondents saying, and these are public officials in community, NAR communities, saying that housing was moderate to acute problem for their community, again in 2018. And then COVID hits. And then you start having people from Silicon Valley and San Francisco and New York, other big cities, say, gosh, I want to go live in Vail, or I want to go live in Eagle, or I want to go live in some other community, NAR community. And they bring with them their salaries, right? Maybe well over $200,000 per person into a community where the average income might be more like $40,000 per person, or maybe even less in some of these communities. And you think, what does that do for housing? Right? What does that do for the attainability of housing for your main service workers, whether those are restaurant workers or your teachers or your firemen? And so in 2018, we were already seeing that a lot of these communities were getting too expensive for those people in local incomes. And we really worry and are starting to see signs that that's just going to get that much worse. And the final thing I'll say about that is that that has its own spin-off impacts, right? When your teachers can no longer live in your community, then they start to move out of the community, have to commute into the community. And that they can get pushed farther and farther out as more communities get more expensive. Because if Jackson gets too expensive, then people move to the next community over. And then that community gets too expensive. So we're seeing now even in Driggs that Driggs is getting too expensive in Idaho. So people are commuting in from Rexburg So instead of people commuting into the bigger city, they're commuting from the bigger city into the smaller town because of affordability. And that creates, as I think the Vail Valley knows, it creates a number of spin-off related impacts, everything from safety concerns, because if your workers are having to go through over snowy passes or up snowy roads, maybe getting stuck at work because of weather and can't get back to their kids, that has its own issues. But also just the diversity of your community, the kind of people who live in your community, really changes. And that changes sort of the heart and soul of a community often. And I think that that's something that a lot of these communities are grappling with. We don't necessarily have the answers, but we want to better understand that challenge and really work with communities that are doing innovative things to share the lessons they're learning, and make sure that we are, as you mentioned earlier, providing tools and resources and things to help all these NAR communities navigate those challenges and the many other things they're experiencing.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with regards to the both positive and negative impacts. And it's not all negative and it's not all positive. The lights on are good. The more people involved who live here full time, they contribute to the community in other ways. The squeeze that it has on all the folks that you said, from nurses to teachers to firefighters to frontline service workers, is something we've grappled with for a long, long time in Eagle County, and so has the Roaring Fork Valley and many other communities in Colorado and beyond. We're watching that really closely to see what types of impact that has, and our credit, our community credit, Vail, Avon, Eagle County have been really active in deed restriction programs and really trying to focus on true workforce housing for our frontline workers. We have a long way to go. We're not close to solving that problem, but it's not a new problem for us like it might be for some of the communities that you mentioned. That implications of that spillover effect with regards to housing are something that it's really interesting. And I would encourage you to look at some of the places like Aspen and Vail and others that have been facing this for a long, long time, to learn from our mistakes and some of our successes. Maybe as you look at some of these other communities, Jackson Hole, it's been a long time issue as well. So it's a fascinating discussion. And as we start to wrap up, I have one other question for you. And it's with what role do you think, through your work and through your research and working with communities across the West, these gateway and natural area resource communities, national parks, high quality of life places, what role does business and industry play in the planning and development within our communities?
It's a great question. And I think it's actually a really important question that can get overlooked. Before I directly address that, I just want to come back to what you're saying about the sort of researching and looking at places like Eagle County and just really drive home that's really what the NAR initiative wants to do, and connecting the research, the education, and the capacity building. Through looking at places like Eagle County, which, as you said, you don't have housing figured out, right? And nobody ever will. It's a wicked problem, like all public policy problems. It's going to be this ongoing moving target. But through looking at what places like Eagle County has done, what's worked well, not so well, and putting you in conversation with places that never thought they'd have a housing problem, like Gardner, Montana, which I think basically went from having no housing problem to having no long-term rentals, because it's a really great place for short-term rentals because it's right next to Yellowstone National Park. Through putting those communities into conversation, our hope is that we can help places that are earlier on in the trajectory see what's coming down the pipeline for them and be proactive about planning and preparing and doing something about it. Because I think looking at a place like Vail, once you're pretty heavily impacted, your options are somewhat limited, right? When all your land's already bought, it's really hard to try and create workforce housing. So one of the things we really want to do is also raise that awareness, because there are so many communities that think this could never happen to them. And unfortunately, evidence suggests that that's not quite right. So I just really want to highlight that and honor the fact that you said there are places that have been really dealing with this and doing a lot of cool things. And we want to learn from that.
Still, to your point, still haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
It's still working hard at it. And recognizing that one of the comments you made, I think, is really important to reiterate. I'm going to put it in my words. Like, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's really hard to figure it out. So you really need to address it from the start. And for many, this is the start. So please continue with regards to the role of business and industry in these communities.
Yeah. So I think that there is a tendency to kind of think of these problems as government problems, but these are everybody problems, right? If we care about a community and we've chosen to move there because we think it's a really cool community, or our family's been there for generations, whoever we are, we have to be part of the problem-solving enterprise. And I think that one encouragement for amenity migrants, people moving into these communities, whether you're a remote worker or otherwise, is just recognizing the impact you can have on that community, both positive and negative. You said earlier, Chris, a really important point. This amenity migration is not just a negative. It actually could be a huge positive for these communities. A lot of these places have really struggled with very mono economy, very tourist dependent or service industry dependent. And that's been really challenging. And we've seen some of the fragility of that in COVID, when Moab totally shut down all their kind of tourist industry. That town took a real toll, the business owners, as well as the government revenue, as well as lots of community members. And so I think that there's just this important element for all of us to think about, how do we make things better and not worse, and sort of taking responsibility for our impacts. And that's true of residents as well as business and industry. And I think that I would really love in this country in general to maybe see more of and really amplify the potential of businesses and industry to be leaders in solving public policy problems, right? So if you're a developer, or if you're the Chamber of Commerce, and I know this is happening, but being part of those conversations about how do we preserve attainable workforce housing or housing for everyone? How do we keep a diverse economy and a diverse community at the same time? How do we get ready for and sort of welcome remote workers, but do so in a way that people actually plug into the community and not just plug into the Wi-Fi? I think these are all our conversations that we need our businesses and industry to be part of. And actually, I think they've got, like I said, a real opportunity to exercise leadership in helping move things in a better direction. And I know already that in Vail that that's happening. But I think that all of us have to, in some ways, accept responsibility and be part of the problem-solving enterprise, and then just leverage the tools and resources we have toward that end, whether it's government with policy and regulation and zoning tools, or it's community members and making sure that you're creating forums where people moving into your community can kind of feel like they are part of the community and become invested in the community and see why, even if they don't have kids in schools, they should pay taxes towards schools. Because I can speak as somebody who grew up in a town that had a lot of second homeowners, and it was really hard to pass school bonds. You know, as a high schooler, I was like, come on, people, like, we need to pay for our schools. But that's the kind of stuff that can be really challenging for these communities. And my hope is this new wave of amenity migration, we can harness people as part of the community, investing in the community, and whether they're creating new businesses or whether the businesses are employing them. You know, there's so many ways that business and industry can help with that.
And I just love the comment you made around plugging into the community and not just the Wi-Fi.
I have to credit my PhD student, who's actually used to be a community and economic development director for Grand County around Moab. So he came up with that. Sure. And I think that's the message, right?
That's exactly the message. It's that's why I wanted to share that. It's a really important message, and it's really a lot about what I think we are trying to accomplish, but probably it sounds like what you're trying to accomplish through this effort too, is how we help build community and build relationships and not just be a transactional environment for people.
Right. Right. And just, we'll say it again, like, making sure we find ways to get the people who are, even if they're just part-time staying in our communities, investing in the community and the well-being of the community. And in some ways it seems like a no-brainer, because we're just asking people to help protect the things that brought them to this place in the first place. But we know from these wicked policy problems, if we don't work together on it and work proactively, it's not going to be protected. And I think we've seen a lot of these in our communities that wish they'd done things 20 years earlier, right? Or that have started to see real divides in their community because they didn't intentionally put the effort in to mobilize everybody as part of that problem-solving enterprise. So I'd love to see the Vail Valley Partnership start to market the plug into the community, not just the Wi-Fi Maybe that should be the motto
maybe
for.
we will. I think it's a, I think it's a great pithy line, but it has much deeper meaning. It does bring everything together nicely. So as we wrap up our conversation, tell our listeners where they can find more information. What's your website? If people want to learn a little bit more and dig in.
Great question. We have a very fully developed website. It's got information about our upcoming events. We have a webinar series underway that's about amenity migration to the rural West. We are slowly building out our online toolkit. We welcome partners and resources to help us build up that toolkit to provide resources for NAR communities throughout the West. And then just a lot of general information about who we are and what we're up to. And you can find that website at www.usu.edu/GNAR or at www.gnar.usu.edu.
And what we'll do is we'll put a link to that in the description of the podcast as well, so people can find it really easily.
Good. And that way, if I got it wrong, you'll have the link.
That's right. Well, I really appreciate your time to spend with us and talk about this. I think it's a fascinating topic that has a lot of opportunity and potentially some challenges for our communities across the West, including here in Eagle County. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it. I think that was really informative and an important discussion as we continue to grapple with growth and Zoom town trends and other things during this COVID environment. So we really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chris.
You've got it. You've been listening to the Partnership Podcast. This is Chris Romer, President and CEO of Vail Valley Partnership.
Be sure to subscribe to the Partnership Podcast on whatever platform you're listening right now and find more resources at vailvalleypartnership.com.